Thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org. It's time for Good Morning Nueva York with me, King Downing. Good morning.
Stuck in despair, these wild thoughts running through my mind. Got my body destined for electric chair. In search for more than just a message here. How about I send one? Spin the block like the precinct up and hit a cop. You crazy, you talk about killing cops. All I see is I bump a nice team to drop. Tell me what you die for. This for the souls that ain't get captured on an iPhone. You can tell me what you die for. This for the souls who ain't get captured on an iPhone. Hoping time will heal the pain. I can't even cry no more. This for the souls who ain't get captured on an iPhone. So many names who ain't get hashtagged. Bodies dumped in a trash bag. Can't we all just get along? We supposed to be kings. They beat us with batons. Not guilty, that's the verdict. How when we all witnessed the murder? Trying to ease my mind watching verses. Turn the news on, they showing scenes of the hearses.
Damn. George Floyd was a man, a black man in his 40s, who died at the hands of Minneapolis police last night. I have to warn you, this video is hard to watch.
Relax. I can't breathe, my face. Stuck in despair, these wild thoughts running through my mind. Got my body destined for electric chair. In search for more than just a message here. How about I send one? Spin the block like the precinct up and hit a cop. You crazy, you talking about killing cops. Off that, all I see is ops. Bump a nice team to drop. Tell me what you die for. This for the souls who ain't get captured on an iPhone. Looking to tell me what you die for. This for the souls who ain't get captured on an iPhone. Hoping time will heal the pain. I can't even cry no more. This for the souls who ain't get captured on an iPhone. Man.
How I feel, sun in the sky, you know how I feel, breeze drifting by.
How are you and yours this morning? Welcome to Good Morning Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downing. I'll be here with you till 7 o'clock. Giovanni Englund is engineering. He's in the studio. I'm remote. If you're waking up now, rise and shine with us. If you're already up, stay with us. And if you're one of the overnight or essential workers and you're just getting home, let us tuck you in. It's a new day, a new week, a new month, and a new decade. Make the most of it. That song that we opened up with was captured on an iPhone by Dre of Kool & Dre. And then, of course, our theme song, Feeling Good, by Andy Bay and the Bay Sisters. On today's show, nursing homes are the hot zones for the COVID pandemic. We hear from a frontline nurse. And in the second half of the program, we're hearing a lot about public schools and teachers, but we're not hearing a whole lot about the public universities and their workers. We sit with the union leader. And for the last day, we take your calls, and we'll take them twice. So this is your last chance, because we will not have an engineer in the studio anymore. So please take advantage of that when you hear the cue. On to weather in transit. It's 68 degrees now, rainy. High today of 78, a low of 71. Sunrise at 6:23, sunset at 7:27. For the morning, we're looking at 73 degrees, cloudy, 25% chance of rain. For the afternoon, 77 degrees, mostly cloudy, 10% chance of rain. For the evening, 73 degrees, mostly cloudy, 15% chance of rain. For tomorrow, Wednesday, a high of 80, a low of 72, with thunderstorms, 60% chance of rain. On to transit, delays on the F line, planned service changes for the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, A, C, E, N, Q, R, and S, I, R. And now, on with the program.
Was shaking and it won't be long till everybody knowing that flash was on the beatbox going, that flash was on the beatbox going, that flash was on the beatbox going, and sha-na-na.
Italian, Caucasian, Japanese, Spanish, Indian, Negro, B, and the B, MC, disc jockeys to all the fly kids and the young ladies. You gotta see to believe. We're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 MCs. I'm Melly Bell and I'm rocking so well.
And I'm missing that because I rock so best.
I'm Raheem in all the ladies' dreams.
And I'm Cowboy to make you jump for joy.
I'm Creole,
solid gold.
The King Creole,
playing the role.
Dick Fist with the Furious 5 plus Grandmaster Flash. Giving you a blast to show the class. So to prove to you all we're second to none.
We're gonna make 5 MCs sound like one.
You gotta dip, dip, die.
So socialize.
Free out your ears.
Advance, open your eyes.
Welcome back to Good Morning Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downing. We'll be here till 7 o'clock. Giovanni Anglin is engineering. He's in the studio. I'm remote. Nursing homes are the hot zones for the COVID pandemic. We hear from a frontline nurse. Now, you're wondering why I opened up the segment with Super Rapping by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. Well, I'm not telling you yet. The song has a connection to this segment, but if you want to take a guess when it comes time for the callers, call in and think, tell us why you think I played it, or you can email me at king@wbai.org. If you're right, I have some music for you, but we'll get to that later. So we have on the air to talk with us Tia Glover, who's an LPN, a licensed practical nurse, and she's going to talk to us about COVID-19. Welcome to WBI this morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for getting up at this early hour. I don't know what shift you usually work, but before we get into all of that, how are you and yours doing in the midst of this COVID pandemic?
We're doing fine. We're hanging in there, trying to stay healthy and positive, stress-free, most of all. Mm-hmm.
And then we're also in the middle of another pandemic, which is the police pandemic. And what's your reaction to that one?
Oh, wow. That's a lot going on with that. I just actually came back from Washington on Friday. We were marching with Al Sharpton and Nan. And that was pretty cool. Going out there and seeing all the people and whatnot, very positive.
And some of the families who have been victimized by police brutality were present. Is that correct?
Right. It was a lot of people there. It was a nice turnout. It was Martin Luther King Jr.'s 53rd anniversary to "I Have a Dream" speech.
Mm-hmm.
And It was really good energy out there, and everybody came out and showed their support and whatnot. Yeah.
So now tell us what your role is as a licensed practical nurse and dealing with health.
Well, I work in a nursing home, and it's pretty interesting working in a nursing home, working with the elders and, you know, seeing, learning the wisdom from them and just seeing, like, all of the things that they're going through and being able to help them. It's a wonderful thing.
And how Well,
I've been into medicine my whole life. I've always wanted to be a health professional. Watching the Cosby Show and Bill Cosby, he was an obstetrician. So I remember I always wanted to be an obstetrician. But as I became, you know, into my life, I did like medical assistant when I was maybe 19, and I've always kind of been into medicine. And I actually went back to school maybe about 2015 for nursing or whatnot and furthered my career. And that's been something that, you know, I've been, I have a really passion, I have a big passion for, which is taking care of people and caring for others or whatnot.
And so how did that change when COVID-19 hit at your workplace?
Well, for me, it didn't change. I actually, when I started seeing like all of the news reports and whatnot, I actually felt it was my duty, it was my job to indefinitely be on the front line. I wasn't scared. I just knew that I was needed. And then essentially my facility that I work in, it was safe. They had locked everything down. The patients, they couldn't have any movement. Like, everybody had to quarantine into their rooms. No visitors were allowed to come in, not even anybody. The ambulance people couldn't even come inside to pick a patient. You know, we had to come downstairs and bring the patients downstairs. So the facility was pretty secure as far as avoiding the disease from coming in. And it was, like, so wonderful because I appreciated that. And then maybe in April, no, sorry, maybe, like, the end of March, 2 weeks into the quarantine, because we started the quarantine maybe about March 11th, I came to work one morning, and I seen one of my coworkers. She had, of course, she had on a mask, and then she had on the mask, the shield. She had the shield on, the face shield. And then she had the hazmat suit on. So I was like, I looked and I was like, oh my goodness, what's going on? And that's when we started getting hit. And essentially most of the nursing homes in the city started getting hit with COVID. And it started, you know, it became very tragic. You know, two people turned into 12 within a few days. And when I mean two people that were COVID positive turned into like 12 people passing away. And it was really traumatic. It was everybody was like kind of a little bit. It was no real organization because this was such a new disease or whatnot. And of course, we didn't have as a lot of people know, we didn't have a lot of protective gear. So it was like, a lot of staff. Some staff were scared. Some staff were sick. So we were short staff on top of having this new, pandemic happening. And we just had to figure out like what to do. So it was just like every day you just had to figure out what you were going to do because it was nothing. There was no written rule at that time. We were just doing it.
So how did this change things? Was it the fact that so many people were more liable to catch it than other diseases that you all had dealt with?
Well, how did it change? Well, the people who were getting COVID then, they were getting it in like the worst way, like basically about February, March, April, they were going through the issues of not being able to breathe. And that was very severe because, you know, like if you get sick, right, and you get a fever or a cold, you can kind of deal with that. But if you can't breathe, like how do you deal with that? And that was something that compromised a lot of people. And along with a lot of people not being able to breathe, most of those people could not walk either. They were not able to walk any longer. And that was something that affected a lot of the people who got COVID at those times. That actually affected them even still to today. As far as a lot of patients lost their motor skills. They're not able to eat like solid foods anymore, not able to walk. There's a 38-year-old woman in my facility who got COVID in April, and we're now in August. Well, we're now September 1st, but she actually cannot walk still to this day and has been kind of like in her bed, you know, not able to walk because the COVID just took so much out of people. And I've never seen anything like that before.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org, which means if you missed any part of this program or you want to listen to it again or pass it on to your friends after it's over, you can go back to the website, find Good Morning Nueva York, and you can tune in. And that's the name of the program, and I'm your host, King Downing. We'll be here till 7 a.m. Giovanni Anglin is engineering. He's in the studio. I'm still remote. And we are talking about nursing homes as the hot zone for the COVID pandemic. And we're talking to Tia Glover, who's a licensed practical nurse working at one of the nursing homes. Now, there were issues at some point in time about the availability of masks for hospital workers, the availability of ventilators for patients. Did any of those issues come up?
Well, in my facility, we didn't have ventilators. We had oxygen. So basically, how the transition happened, the hospital, of course, the people went to the hospital and to get help. But since there's no cure or whatnot, basically a lot of the patients were sent straight from the hospital to the nursing home. And essentially sent there either to hopefully get well or to die. And because there was no medicine, So the only thing you could do was just give them care. Give them maybe antibiotics doesn't work, but some doctors were prescribing antibiotics, but this is not it's not a bacteria, so antibiotics wouldn't work. It's a virus or whatnot. So we would basically give them oxygen or whatnot, but it was, to me, I feel like it was really rough. Because a lot of people, from what I noticed, like you would talk to some of the patients, and when you would ask them, like if they had COVID, like let's say they were recovering, and you would ask them, it was like COVID was like, it was such a bad label that a lot of the patients wouldn't even want to own up to the fact that they had it, and they were looking in their charts and you'd say, oh, okay, they were COVID positive or whatnot. So it was just like a bad label, and just nobody really knew how to deal with COVID. We didn't have a manuscript. We didn't have any written rules down.
Yeah, I can hear you. And can you tell a story about a particular person and, you know, how they were reacting and how you dealt with them, you know, along the lines of, so one day, you know, I came in to deal with this patient and this or that happened.
Well, okay, so I have a story where it was like two patients in the room, and I noticed that they were, well, me personally, what I felt was important, I felt it was important to motivate the patient because since they didn't have any free movement, they didn't have any visitors also. They didn't actually have their family members there to give them love and care. And, you know, when your family member is in the hospital or sick, you know, sometimes they might not do certain things. They might not want to take medication. They might not want to eat. And you have to be there to encourage them, like, okay, Ma, okay, Auntie, you know, you should eat this or you should take this or drink this water. And it was not really, you know, with everybody kind of going crazy, it wasn't a lot of that. A lot of people just didn't really understand what was going on. So as fast as, you know, it came so fast. So I made it a point to try to give a lot of the patients encouragement and let them know that they can beat this. And if they fight and they can beat it. Because, you know, sometimes we, it's mind over matter. And if you let your brain decide that this is it, then your brain cells can now communicate to the cells in your body. And it can, in turn, now make you even more weaker and susceptible for this disease to take over your immune system, right? So I found that I would do that a lot with patients, and that would help. It would help because, like, you would see some patients that wouldn't want to eat, and you'll ask them, and then you encourage them to eat, and they'll still say no. But then if you actually, like, maybe try to, like, put the food in their mouth, they would eat it. And the reason being why they would initially say no, because they're so weak and they're weak-minded also from being so sick that they can't even concentrate when thinking of it. They can't even think about it. They can't, and eating was important, and eating the right things also is important because that helps with building up their immune cells and nutrition, the nutritional part that a lot of people don't think is important, because medicine is not the answer to it all. Nutrition is actually the first step of care. That's the preventative care before you get to the aftercare of actually being sick.
So we're talking to Tia Glover, who's a licensed practical nurse, and she's telling us her experiences during COVID in the nursing home. You have a chance to speak to her if you'd like to, or ask any questions or comment on anything that you want to. I've had some conversations with Tia, and she's pretty well informed on a lot of things. So whatever it is you want to bring up, you know, she can act as my co-host, even if it's not about her working in the nursing home. It could be on any topic that you would like, and she will just weigh in as my co-host. So the number is 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. And if you have any idea why I open up this segment with Super Rappin' by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, you can also take a guess at that when you call in, or you can email me at king@wbai.org. And if you're right, I'm going to send you some music. So, getting back to this, how did you, now you are in this very dangerous health situation, and you say everybody's learning as they go. Now, you're coming home to a family, and how did that feel, and how did you deal with that?
Right. Honestly, and a lot of my coworkers, we had the same experience. We actually did not want to, I did not fully disclose to my family members the death that I was seeing in front of me. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to talk about it because I wasn't scared. But more importantly, I didn't want them to become scared of me, because I felt like, you know, I was doing all the proper precautions and washed my hands properly and whatnot. And so mainly what I was doing and what my family was doing, we were trying to take care of our nutrition. So we were eating a lot of garlic and a lot of ginger, sea moss. You have to have a lot of vitamin C levels. So I was, you know, drinking a lot of lemons and whatnot. And one of the most important things that I felt like was needed was not letting the fear overwhelm you. Was not letting the fear overwhelm you, and just trying to be positive in that way. And also, too, I never got sick. I never got sick. I never even got a cold. And, you know, I don't know if anybody else experienced, well, I'm quite sure a lot of people experienced this. In the beginning, if you had, like, a little tickle in your throat or a little nose run, you immediately got scared and was like, oh, my God, I hope I don't have it. And
Right.
So therefore, I refused to even allow myself to even get a little bit sick, because it was like, okay, if I even get a cough or a runny nose, one, it could scare me, and then two, when I'm out in the public, it could scare others. So So immediately, anytime I felt that, I kind of just came home and just nursed myself really quickly, like taking some, you know, eating some garlic and maybe even taking like some type of medicine or whatnot, like a Dayquil or something like that, just to knock it out so I would just be done with it. And that was pretty effective. I still, every morning, I like 2 tablespoons of sea moss with a half a teaspoon of garlic, because garlic is good to keep colds away and inflammation and whatnot.
So yeah. I want to jump in there for a second, because you're saying some things. You're talking about vitamin C, sea moss, garlic. You named a couple, ginger, a couple of other things. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to all of the information that's been put out around COVID. And the main thing that's been said is wash your hands. That makes sense. Wear a mask. That makes sense. I haven't seen anything from any of the official sources that talk about any of the nutritional things that you've mentioned, and yet you're doing them and you say you've gotten results. Where did you get that information, and what do those types of natural things do to help the body?
Well, so we have an immune system, you know, and our immune system is basically there. It's like our army. It's like our army to attack any invaders that come in and try to take over. And so basically you have to build up your army. You have to strengthen your army. And that's where all the nutrients come in, because it's like basically we have many diseases, a poor diet. And that's something that, you know, we don't center on enough. You know, a lot of people, you know, we eat a lot of fast food, you know, gluttonous. And just
Tia, I'm going to jump in here for a second because we have a caller. And this is our last day we're going to be able to take calls. So, caller, you're on WBAI. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your question or comment?
Good morning to the beloved family. I have a comment, and
you never tell us your name and where you're calling from, even though I know who you are.
Yes, this is my aunt calling from the gate, King. Tia, thank you for the piece on your awareness of the importance of nutrition and building up the immune system. I want to make the point that Tia was talking earlier about totally being, you know, this thing just appearing as it were. And we need to remember that when Trump came in, he cut the CDC 19%.
Center for Disease Control.
In terms of funding. And he also, because there was to be a simulation of, I mean, certain people knew this pandemic was coming, right? That both Bush and Obama left in place, 700 people involved, and he cut all of that out. So it's no surprise. Now, another point I want to make is that not.
Well, Maya, I'm sorry. I've got to leave it there because my segment is getting ready to close down. Thanks for calling. Call back again. And I just wanted to take the last moment, Tia, to ask you, why did I play Super Rappin' by Grandmaster Flash in the Furious Five?
Oh, that is my family. My dad is a Grandmaster Melly Mel. My uncle is Kid Creole.
And so just as we wind up, so just tell me one story about your father that we wouldn't know, because, you know, we know him from public appearances. Just tell us one thing.
One story about my dad y'all wouldn't know?
Yeah.
Wow.
What was he like when he's not, you know, when he's not super rapping, which was the basis of the message? A lot of people don't know that. So what was he like the rest of the time?
Well, my dad is very intelligent. A lot of that stuff, you know, he's a very intelligent person. If anybody listens to his interviews, you can kind of see that in his interviews. You know, growing up, me and my siblings, we had like a very humble upbringing. My dad, he because of his experiences in the industry, he kind of didn't want his kids to kind of be devoured by it and go through any situations or being taken advantage of. But he kind of wanted us to more concentrate on our education and not kind of like run into the music industry, because I do have a brother that is a rapper and a singer. But he was more or less like, you know, so like I have a sister who she's into law. I have another sister that's a teacher or whatnot. And so my dad, he's big on education. He's definitely big on education.
Well, it sounds like the proof is in you, because you have spoken very well about the situation. Thank you, Tia Glover, licensed practical nurse, and also studying nutrition. And thank you for adding that extra information. And thanks, Mayotte, for pointing out the other details you did. We are moving into the second half of the program. We'll be back after these messages. Have a good day, Tia.
It's me. Okay, you too.
I went to see the doctor today, because ever since you've been gone, I had a pain deep down inside. He says there's nothing really wrong with me. I'm just missing my man. So, honey, please, come on home as soon as you can. Doctor, the order say there's only one thing for me. Nothing he can do, cause only you can cure me. Send in my
$10 a month. It's the price of a gigabyte of data for that iPad you never use. It's two overpriced coffees you ordered when you forgot to look at the menu. It's your overzealous attempts to meet the credit card minimum at the bodega on the corner. But $10 a month could be a lot more. Become a BAI buddy and commit to a recurring monthly donation to WBAI. This money will help us continue to broadcast the thoughts and perspectives of the progressive public. A BAI buddy is also not without perks. Your monthly contribution will earn you a WBAI tote bag and a member card offering Zipcar sales, discounted meals at select restaurants, and a handful of other benefits. You will also become a full voting member of WBAI, and our diverse programming will reflect your voice. Go to givetowbai.org and become a BAI buddy to support Free Speech Radio today.
To Good Morning Nueva York. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org. So if you missed the show or you want to tell your friends, go ahead and you can find us under Good Morning Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downing. Giovanni Anglin is engineering in the studio. I'm still remote. In the background, another brick in the wall, Pink Floyd. And on to our segment. We're hearing a lot about the public schools and their teachers, but we're not hearing a whole lot about the public universities and their workers. We talked to a union leader, and we have with us this morning Andrea Vasquez, who is the who's the first vice president of the Professional Staff Congress, or PSC, the collective bargaining unit for the workers in the CUNY system. Full disclosure, I was a PSC member when I taught in the CUNY system. Andrea, welcome to WBAI, and thanks for getting up this morning.
Good morning, King. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm great. I want to start right off. How are your members doing under COVID-19?
Well, struggling. People are doing their jobs remotely still. Almost all of our members are doing their jobs remotely. But it's been a real challenge since day one, right? From one day to the next, everyone's lives changed, and certainly our work lives and our, you know, terms and conditions of employment all changed overnight. So it's been a real struggle.
And clearly, you've, I assume that you've had some members who have gotten ill, and maybe you've lost some members?
We have. We have sadly lost approximately 47 members that we know of. The largest of any university in the country, actually, the highest number. And who knows how many students we've lost. So it's a really sad, difficult time.
And could you just take us through PSC and who your collective bargaining unit covers?
Right. You mentioned we're all employees of the City University of New York. We're the professional staff. We represent 30,000 members approximately, and that's both faculty, full-time and part-time faculty, as well as the professional staff, which is about 5,000 who don't teach, who are members of our university, 6,000, maybe even close to 7, actually, if you consider the different titles. You know, of course, there are many other unions at CUNY. DC 37, for example, has 10,000 employees at CUNY. So, yeah, but we're definitely the largest union representing workers at the City University.
Now, the last time that I had reps from PSC on, it was right around the time that the vote was being taken to ratify the new contract. Uh-huh. And so what issues are coming up now with the attempt of CUNY to return to whatever form of teaching that's going to go on?
Well, luckily, CUNY is not bringing back most classes to face-to-face. So only about 4% of employees will be on campus. And some of this in the realm of teaching, some of it involves students who do clinical work or science, you know, research and experiments that really they need to be in a lab. They need to be performing some functions in the lab. So there's a small number returning. It's not like the situation with the UFT and the public school teachers at this moment. But that said, we had a real struggle with CUNY in terms of getting everyone home safely. So they immediately called for online remote, you know, learning and online teaching in mid-March. But there were thousands of professional staff who were left on campus, and the union had to deal with this and organize members and communicate with members and fight with CUNY about getting us all home safely. And that took a couple of weeks right at the beginning. So right now, then all summer, it was, you know, in the spring, obviously, it was a struggle to continue to do the work that we need to do to, so our students could continue to take their classes during the spring and graduate for those who needed to graduate. For faculty members, you know, most had never taught online before, so they immediately had to try to transform their classes so they would continue to give, you know, the quality, crucial education to our students. There are around 275,000 degree-seeking students at CUNY, and there's an equal number of students at CUNY who are in other programs, like continuing ed programs, or vocational programs. We're talking about, you know, over 500,000 students in this city relying on CUNY for an education, relying on CUNY for a future. I myself am a CUNY graduate. I'm, you know, born and bred New Yorker and so many of us just know the crucial role that this university plays in this city. So we were from one minute to the next trying to keep things going, setting ourselves up for working at home, and of course our students were as well. And many of our students, as you probably know, I mean, probably about over half of the undergraduate students at CUNY come from families with household incomes of under $30,000. 80% of our undergraduate students are students of color. So these are students who have relied on the university, relied on their college, part of their college community, and all of a sudden they were working from home. And many did not have the equipment at home, the technology they needed to succeed. Many were in, did not have comfortable private rooms in which to work and study. Libraries were closed. So we were all facing a real crisis as soon as COVID hit.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org. We're talking about the effect on the pandemic of the CUNY system and the CUNY workers, and we're talking with Andrea Vasquez, who is the first vice president of the Professional Staff Congress, or PSC. I wanted to go back to what you said about the conditions that were going on in March. You said you had to fight because many of the people were still at work. Can you give an example of, let's say, one person's situation still on the job while this pandemic is spreading and the students are being sent home, and what you all had to do?
Well, we had we have many both academic advisors and mental health counselors, for example, working at CUNY. And I won't, I'm not giving a name, but people were not called home right away, and students were not. There was no way for students to get what they needed from home right away. So there were many offices that remained open, and students were coming in because they needed advice, because they needed to speak to someone. Let's not forget, CUNY students and the communities in which students live were the hardest hit by COVID. So not CUNY always, there was a crisis at CUNY before COVID hit. There was a crisis of funding. There was a crisis of disinvestment in the whole university and the students here. And so once COVID hit, the need did not decrease. The need only increased. So students continued to come in, and staff were not set up to work at home. Faculty were not set up to work at home. We had faculty members who have worked in the same office for 30 years, and they didn't have their hard drives at home. They didn't have their computers at home, and they didn't teach online. So, you know, it's hard to focus on one person because we do, as the staff, we do thousands of different kinds of jobs at CUNY in departments, in research centers, in labs, and of course the faculty. We have about 7,500 full-time faculty, and we had around 13,000 part-time faculty. So there were just endless examples of people who were, some people, professional staff left behind, and full-time staff coming back and forth even to get equipment, to get paper for their printers at home. We had CUNY began to distribute some computers after a while to students, and we did not want that to happen on campus. I mean, this was a time when we were trying to keep everyone home in the city. One of the decent things the governor did during this crisis was to really try to clear out the city, and yet CUNY still had people coming into work on public transportation. They had students coming in to pick up laptops, and we had no idea, and they were not prepared. The PPE was certainly not in higher ed. I was listening to the speaker you had on before me about hospitals, but if hospitals were not equipped, you can be sure that college buildings were not equipped to have students and faculty and staff still roaming around the building. So that was sort of the immediate struggle that we had. Now, luckily, almost everyone is at home, and it's been a constant struggle, in fact, and we still are hearing of cases, now that we're on the other end, hopefully, we're hearing of many more cases of people being called back in dribs and drabs, very quietly sometimes. And when we hear from our members that they've been called back, CUNY is obliged to have public documents about the standards of and meeting requirements and the state regulations on every building that they open. So even if it's one or three people who are coming back, or one student and one college lab technician and one faculty member doing work in a lab, they need to be reassured in advance that that location is safe. And we have not been experiencing that from CUNY. And so that's one of the very important things that we've been working on lately. Of course, in addition to other things like fighting preemptive layoffs of nearly 3,000 part-time faculty. Way back in probably May, we heard about this, and we've been fighting on this front all summer. So it's been a nonstop. We've kind of called it a summer of struggle, and it's been nonstop, really, for the union. And so many of our members have stepped up to defend, you know, themselves, their own rights, their CUNY communities, but most importantly, CUNY students. Everything
yes.
that this union does really is always with students in mind.
I would like to get back to the preemptive layoffs, but I want to let our listeners know we're talking to Andrea Vasquez, who's the first vice president of the Professional Staff Congress for the CUNY University System. And this is a time for you to call in with any questions or comments that you have for her or anything else that you want to talk about. If it's another topic, Andrea is very versed, and she can be my co-host on almost any subject. So you can call us at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. And we're looking forward to your calls. This is the last day because Michael G. will be back engineering remotely, and you won't have access to the phones, and we won't. So your last chance for a little while. So talk about the preemptive layoffs. Tell us about that and what you all did about it.
Well, it was really shameful because unlike any other, I think pretty much any other agency or institution in New York, CUNY announced the layoff of thousands of part-timers even before a single budget cut had been announced by the governor or by the mayor. So they sort of took advantage of this crisis in trying to save money. And, you know, their austerity budget, their racialized austerity budgeting was just accelerated and put into effect way back in, I guess it was probably in May that we, maybe even earlier, that we first heard about these layoffs. And it was, you know, we immediately began mobilizing and immediately began hearing, sort of wanting to hear from every member who had gotten notice of non-reappointment, it's called. But it's really basically was a layoff. And unfortunately, you know, you probably know and your listeners probably know that CUNY relies heavily on the use of part-time contingent labor, labor that is for the most part semester by semester hiring. They balance their budget this way, keeping thousands of workers in the dark about whether they have a job each semester, whether they will have enough classes to teach to get their medical insurance paid. And this is a system that's been in effect for ages, for decades, and the union has been fighting against it in various ways. You mentioned our last contract. We did get significant pay raises for this lowest paid group of workers, from 45% to 75% increases in salary, but adjuncts are still underpaid, and we also got some three-year appointments for thousands, a couple of thousand part-timers, but still, the university relies on this exploitative system of contingent labor as it has for decades, and really, that's what one of the things that's really at the core of the crisis at CUNY, that reliance on this kind of labor. Students deserve faculty who they know will be there, who they can get to know, who can spend the time with them because they're not racing off to other jobs. So there CUNY went and took advantage right at the beginning of this crisis and told nearly 3,000 workers that, oh, sorry, and this is, you know, you asked about individual stories before. We had a day of action, actually, on August 26th, which was a 24-hour online action, and we heard so many voices of our members and students and allies. And there was one woman, I forget actually which college she was at, but she'd given 15 years of time teaching, and she got a two-sentence message from CUNY saying, thank you for your service. This is your letter of non-reappointment. It was just heartbreaking to see this and to hear this on Zoom. And we have a chancellor and we have a university that prides itself in its CUNY family, that prides itself in lifting students out of poverty, helping to lift students out of poverty, and the CUNY family. And she said in her message, she treats a water bug that she finds in her apartment with more respect than she was treated after 15 years of teaching. It was just heartbreaking and angering, infuriating, to hear story after story about committed part-time faculty who have lost their job. And we've been fighting all summer, and in many cases, our campus chapter chairs have pushed back and have stopped some of the layoffs, and some of the members have been reappointed. But this is a system that exists every year. Every year there's turnover. Every year there's probably 1,000 adjuncts who are not reappointed with no notice and no reasons. And sometimes it's people who want to move on, but often it's not. It's living this life of uncertainty. And
so I want to step in here for a second because we have a caller, and this is our last day to take calls for a while, so call it.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to WBAI. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Your question or comment? Hi, El.
In regards to the situation there with CUNY, as the basketball and baseball, the athletes, they've taken a stand where they've actually walked out. I know the Taylor Law, and the Taylor Law may affect your union teachers there at CUNY, but have you thought of, and when I say you, I mean you as a unit collectively, thought of taking such an action as the athletes who refused just to work? They walked off of the fields, off of the basketball courts, and the various athletic settings. So do you think that would be something that would be powerful enough? And have you investigated those who are sending out the letters of non-assignments? Have their salaries been reduced, or have any of those people been terminated? Thank you for taking my questions.
Thank you, Elle. Andrea?
Sure. Those are great questions. Thank you so much, Elle. Yes, we have thought about everything, job actions. We had actions all summer long, as I mentioned, and we're fighting locally and we're fighting centrally, you know, and we also in impact bargaining with CUNY. So we have made some agreements with CUNY. We've also have a legal suit against CUNY around these layoffs, because let's face it, the CARES money that our congresspeople got for us was supposed to keep people employed. So we have been working on every front. And as you may know, a few years ago I mentioned we did take a strike authorization vote in our union, and we had a very high vote. I think it was 92% yes on strike authorization. That was around a contract. So that was a very different time, and it was a very different situation. You know, we're very inspired and supportive of the actions that others have taken around questions of racial justice right now, and that's, of course, a huge issue for us at CUNY as well. We see the fight for quality public higher education as a fight for racial justice and educational justice. So we have said since the beginning of the summer that all options are on the table, and we are having conversations with members about how we can escalate, and, you know, it's also a real challenge to be not on the job. So a job action, when you're not on the job, there's so many ways that this is more complicated. It's not a contract fight. And as I said before, we have so many different kinds of jobs. And, of course, above all, we care deeply about our students and our students' success. So we are discussing this, and we are listening to what's happening with the UFT. But, of course, the UFT, they're all being called back to work. We're not being called back to work, as I said, right now. But we are definitely discussing all options, including the possibility of having a strike authorization vote if we feel that it's necessary, and most important, if we feel we can win.
We'll have to leave it there. This was Andrea Vasquez. I want to thank you. She's the first vice president of the Professional Staff Congress. I'm going to follow up with you because I want to do something else as we get close to the next court appearance around the suit that you said had been filed. So thank you for being on the air.
Thank you for having me.
So the program, Good Morning Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downey. Thank you for joining us. We will be back on Thursday with another program, so stick around for that on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org. So if you missed the program or a part you want to tell your friends, go online. And also, you could also go to give2WBAI.org and make a donation in the name of this show in appreciation for what we do for you. Talk to you on Thursday. Have a great day.
You know how I feel. Blossom on the tree. You know how I feel. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life for me. Feeling good. Yeah. Dragonfly out in the sun. You know what I mean. Butterflies are having fun. You know what.
And avoiding things in the environment that can be harmful to you and your family. The world can be a confusing place. Hi, I'm Patty Wood from Green Street, and every Tuesday morning, Doug and I will sort it out for you, calling out the bad actors, bringing you insightful interviews with experts, and sharing our own views on the issues of the day. So tune in to Green Street every Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, right here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and streaming around the world at WBAI.org.
What is the 2020 census? Every 10 years, the census records everyone living in this country. It's written in the Constitution and comes in a questionnaire that counts everyone who lives at your address on April 1st. The data can be used to inform funding for services like fire stations, schools, clinics, and representation that affect your community.
How will 2020 census data be used? Where there are more people, there are more needs for public services. That's why the census is used by the government to inform funding decisions each year.
How does the 2020 census affect representation? There are 435 seats in the House of Representatives. These get distributed to the 50 states by population, and an accurate census response helps your state get the right amount of seats. States with smaller populations get at least one, while states with larger populations might get more.
A station dedicated to and sponsored by its listeners. From 1960 to present day, WBAI has been promoting an innovative perspective of news, public affairs, music, arts, health, and science. In order to provide a truly unique voice to New York City, WBAI receives its financial assistance from listeners like you. To help WBAI continue this tradition, you can become a BAI buddy by giving a generous monthly donation of as little as $10. It's a safe, secure, and simple way to support your local station. To become a BAI buddy, go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
This station is so significant for me. I remember the days that we were fighting against the overuse of stop and frisk. No other station would cover the conversation and inform the listeners.
Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams.
The acronym for WBAI is where badass insurgents learn how to get their information out in a clear way. This station must survive. Connect the dots. There's a movement to destroy.